podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
All right, the Reds, it's your virtual cuddle from fellow Reds. It's the weekender from the Anfield Wrap, where we all talk about not being dead down, that the Reds are a bit shit at the moment, and try and clutch at some straws to tell you why the season can still be all right-ish. To do that with me, I've got Carl Kopech, Robbie O'Neill and Chloe Bloxham. And as well as the Reds, there's some other stuff as ever in there. So you also got me again, Soz, talking to Liam Watson, manager of Southport, about the null and void aspect of non-league football. We've also got Lizzie talking to Sarah, I'll go for. That threw me, there's no H on the end. Sarah Lawton, sorry Sarah, from the Thrive CIC project, helping young people from care with support into work. And then it'll be us again, this panel again, talking about the Sheffield United game on Sunday. We're going to start off with a bit of a round robin on sort of how we all feel and where we're all at with Liverpool currently. Robbie, how are you, mate?
It's sweet. It's, to be fair, mate, today's been quite sobering. I've been a bit of a pickle, in a bit of a pickle over the derby all week. It feels weird to say, you know, to just like remember what it's like to get beat by Everton. It's been so long. It's just an odd sensation. And you know, fortunately I haven't seen an Evertonian all week, so that's, you know, that's not too bad. But obviously today, what's happened with Alisson Becker's dad really just brought things into, like, you know, stark realization that, you know, it's football, and you know it is for a few days, but you've got to crack on, and the real world's going on out there, and you know, shit's going down. So that was really, really sobering today, and I was just devastated for Alisson. And I'm at the point now where I just hope that, like, at this weekend, that the Reds can get out there and just try and put this week behind them and crack on.
Yeah, Carl, I think Robbie's right there, isn't he, mate, that, you know, there are things that help to put things into perspective. It's obviously amazingly tragic and really sad for Alisson regarding his father. I mean, I've lost a parent not so long back myself. I can tell you how hard that is. So he must be struggling right now. Obviously, there will be an impact maybe on, you know, whether he wants to play football currently or not. I think we'd respect his decision either way. But, you know, both what's gone on with him and with Jürgen in recent times does help you bring it back to earth a little bit, doesn't it? About, because I'm sure me and you have talked about it before. You've no doubt written something on it, Carl. You've no doubt written something on it. But the idea that you can almost forget footballers and football managers are human sometimes, you know what I mean? It's easy to just sort of talk about them in terms of their fitness, their form, whether they want to go and play for another football club, whatever it may be, and forget that, you know, they're a person with family, with feelings.
And not just that, just with the sort of general proclivities of life as well. Like, you know, you can have a bad day. It doesn't matter how much money you've got. Well, you know, if what your form's been like, you can just feel bad one day, or, you know, not quite up to speed, then you can start beating yourself up about it. Or you can have stuff going on at home and, you know, or in your personal life. And heart really goes out to Alisson Becker, because I think it's slightly worse if it's an accidental death. You know, it's not an illness or something. It's like, you know, an accident. That's up there for absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and being so far away from the family at the time as well, and unable to go back, I'm assuming. It's just, who's asked about Sheffield United after that? You know, it's just the way. I mean, I've had it myself, and I lost my sister, and Liverpool went from the most important thing into my life to not, for the first time ever, not knowing who we were playing next. And, you know, it's, and I'm not just talking about death and that sort of thing either. I'm talking about just general life things, like, you know, your kid might not be well and you're on the pitch with 40,000 people screaming at you, and you're thinking, what if they've got to bed okay? They're all right. You know, it's a human thing. It's not just robots going onto a pitch and kicking a ball about. You know, they've got other things on, and suddenly, you know, it's important to us, but it may not be always to them.
Yeah, and Chloe, as well, I think it's important to remember, and this isn't, I can't be bothered with anyone who starts going on about things being excuses, because that's really boring currently, but what I would say, though, is it's like what they're doing currently, these lads, for us, in terms of still going out, still playing football, still turning up for training, that's all well and good. But, you know, there's a big slice of their lives that's missing every time they go and do it. Do you know what I mean? No crowd, the weird processes that they will have to go through, you know, being in different zones and not being able to spend time together as they would ordinarily, you know, you're in and out of changing rooms and what have you. You know, again, that might get lost a little bit, I think, in some of the conversations that goes on, because just because Liverpool's form is currently not how we would like it, you know, the machine, the virtual machine gun comes out and it's like, whose fault is it? You know, is it FSG? Is it the manager? Is it the players? We must scapegoat someone. When actually you think, maybe you should just give these lads a bit of a break.
Yeah, I mean, what they've done for us over the last three seasons has been unbelievable, especially when Jürgen came in, what he's done for this club. And I think the difference is that, for me, since the Everton game, I've took a step back from football. I haven't watched the Champions League, and that's not like me. I haven't watched the likes of Leeds. That's not like me. I'd never miss a game of football. But I've took a step back from football, and these lads can't. It's their job. Mm. So, you know, they're going through all of this and all the whatever's going on behind the scenes with the families that you don't know of. And like where we can say, okay, I'm taking a break from football. You know, football is our escape. And right now it's not doing anything for us. If anything, it's giving us even more of a depression. So, you know, we can take that. We've got the privilege to take the step back and, you know, to instead occupy ourselves with something else. And for them, it's their job. It's no escape. You know, they've got to then try and put everything behind them, separate their lives from professional to personal and go on that pitch and try and do something for the badge and the club. And it can get lost with fans. And, you know, after the game, like Everton and stuff like that, you expect it to be a bit dampened and depressed by fans of Liverpool. But I also think, you know, after, you know, that day, that night after that game's gone, you just need to forget about it. It's a game of football. Look at the world. It's up in flames around us. You know, we're finally seeing the end of something, hopefully. And I think we just, you know, whatever hits us this season, let get it, you know, there's no better time to get it out. A season where we can't be there. A season where there's so many things in the way for every single person in this world, including footballers. If you get it all out the way now, hopefully next season, you know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. We're back with support and, you know, they can go and visit family and friends. You can have the kind of social life again and a bit of support, because I bet you, you know, Alisson misses most at the fact that on Sunday night, he's not going to have 50,000 fans behind him shouting for him, saying, go on, lad, you know, no matter what you've done, you know, your little bad spell of form, that doesn't matter to us. Like, we understand your personal problems. And, you know, just give him that bit of support, which he can get it through a computer, but he can't get it in the ground anymore. And now you'll miss that. So I think we just need to be brought back to reality. And the thing with Alisson's dad really has done that.
Yeah.
Robert, that makes me think about Titi Kamara. Obviously, he played against West Ham on the day his dad died, and he scored and broke down. He broke down. And he said afterwards he needed it. He needed to play that game. And he needed that connection with the fans afterwards, you know, because they were sort of, you know, although he doesn't know us all individually, it's a support network for him. And poor Alisson hasn't got that. He hasn't got the round of applause when he runs on the pitch now.
And it's also, I suppose, like the world we live in now, everyone talks about isolation. And it's like the what really puts it into stark reality for people like Alisson and Jürgen Klopp is it's like the sense of separation. Like if you're from another country and you're in the UK, it's not like you can just like go around the corner and see, you know, give your ma a hug or anything like that. They're literally on the other side of the world. And to be sat there in your house feeling so helpless, I just can't even like fathom how he must be feeling. And it's like, it's just really, really, really sad. It's just really, really sad. And I just hope that like there's people at the club who are there for him. And I'm sure they will be. Yeah. I'm sure they will be. They need to be rallying around each other now, because it's been one thing after another for them, and I just hope that they can just have a bit of unity in this at the moment.
Yeah, there is more stuff, you know, on just the purely footballing side, away from the life side that we've been talking about, Robbie. I mean, there's obviously what happened with Henderson in the derby in terms of we've lost him now and he's likely out for... There's still proper confirmation still to come, but, you know, even the most optimistic estimates seem to be sort of a month, 6 weeks. I personally wouldn't be surprised if it's the season. On the other side of the coin, though, you know, and we'll talk about this later on properly when we're talking about the Sheffield United game. But we, you know, I think the club are acutely aware as well that they need to put some kind of positivity out. And they were like, hey, everyone, Jota's in training there. And it's like, way. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's worth saying as well, isn't it, Robbie, that, you know, okay, our expectations of this season are not going to be fulfilled. We all wanted the thing where we retain the title and, you know, we go on this charge and win it for years and all that kind of stuff. That is not going to happen. We still, the more optimistic among us will still be looking at the European Cup. Of course, they will, and I will not deny you your optimism if you're still doing that. Fair play to you. But equally, though, Just any single win in a game is still good, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like, never mind cups and stuff for now. Like, if we go to Sheffield United at the weekend and win, that will feel good.
It will. And it's something that's sorely missed, isn't it? I think those pictures of Jota, you know, you couldn't help but feel a bit of excitement about it, because I think watching Liverpool over the last few weeks, it has been a bit of a chore, because, you know, we've been so pedestrian. But what he offers such a thrust to our attack. You know, he's got a bit of guile and ingenuity about him, which the other three lads have got. But because they're so short on confidence, Jota's got that element about him where I fancy him to be coming into back into the squad and like thinking, I can make a difference here. He's a player that rises to the occasion, and I think, as a fan, when you know that you've got players like that, like amongst your ranks, you're going to be. It gives you cause for optimism, and I mean, obviously, I personally thought the last week was going to be the nadir of the season. I sensed something. We'd either get Aiden in Leipzig or the derby wouldn't go our way, just because of the way results have been over the last month or two. But I thought after that, we'll gather and we'll push on from there. And I genuinely think that this weekend in particular is going to be the moment where Liverpool starts a rally. And I think if he's in the squad, it's not just him, it's Naby Keita as well. Mm. You know, if Keita's available, you've got two players there that could really push on. And other point to that is, with the Henderson injury, it's an opportunity for Ben Davies to come in. It's an opportunity for Ozan Kabak to actually say, you know what, I can make a mark for myself here. Things haven't gone great, but there's an opportunity for me to show that I can play for Liverpool Football Club and I can be here next season and make a difference to a team which will hopefully next year be challenging for the title.
Carl, do you want one of my straws theories that I've got?
Go on, I've got one as well.
Just being for a walk and the straws dropped out the clouds and I clutched them and I thought, okay, I'm going to say this on the show. It is this, that it's away from home, obviously, on Sunday. And I've got this thing about maybe when it's at home, they all just drive in, get changed, play footy and get off again. I imagine that's sort of how it's going with COVID and stuff. If it's away, maybe they get like a little bit more time together, you know what I mean? Yes. They're on the bus or whatever, you know what I mean? And I'm just thinking, you know, as I mentioned this show being like group therapy, I almost wonder whether they can give themselves a bit of group therapy on the trip to Sheffield and then be ready to go and get us that result that we all are desperate for right now. What do you reckon?
I'll take that as well. If you want to hand that straw over, I'll grab that with you as well. I'm more than that. I found one in the week as well. In 2004-05, the year of Istanbul, after 25 games, we had 40 points. And we were in fifth place. Now we're in sixth place on 25 points. Sorry, 25 games. And 40 points.
Oh, I like this car. Is this the one where like people are going to start saying about stuff that happened on Coronation?
The Grand National. Like that. Yeah, that's all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
How's the Pope getting on?
I absolutely love them. Honestly, when they get going, like, I think we need to make sure we're through against Leipzig first. Like, but when they get going, I love that. I absolutely love them.
Where's the final being played? It's on. It's absolutely on. We're going to repeat 2005.
Here we go. Yeah,
Let's get Juve next. Well, Leverkusen's still around. We'll find them. And also, there's the chance that we could play the runaway league winners in the semi final as well. It could still happen, as we did in 2005. Yeah.
Chloe,
get aboard my dream.
It's the most Liverpool thing ever, not in it. Absolutely. And then all of a sudden, you've won the biggest trophy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, honestly, Man City, you're desperate for it. Which Liverpool thing is, like, you can beat us to the Premier League again and absolutely get no recognition because no one is asked about you. Like, Liverpool winning number seven, like, it's a match made in heaven of some that European Cup. So, it seems destined, Istanbul. And, like, watch me absolutely jinx it now. So, you know, I'm going to touch wood or something just in case. But it is the most Liverpool thing you'll ever hear of that.
I'm going to bring Igor Biscan's going to play centre back for us. Was he now early 40s? Bring him on. Still do a job.
If he's a free agent, surely we can get him in. Let's see. Give us a shout, Igor, if you're listening, lad.
By the way, there's just Leipzig a second in the Bundesliga and Leverkusen. I think they were second when we played in 2005. Yeah. So there's another one for you.
See, this is brilliant. I just love a podcast where we just do loads of these parallels, even if it's absolute nonsense, because it's making, I feel happier already. Well, listen, as promised before, we've got the middle section of the weekend now. So it's me speaking to Liam Watson, manager of Southport Football Club, Lizzie with Sarah Lawton from the Thrive CIC project. And then you'll be back with us shortly talking about Sheffield United. Okay, joined by the manager of Southport, Liam Watson. Anyone who's followed the Merseyside non-league scene over the last decade or so or more, really, will recognise that name. Prolific striker in non-league as well. I always remember seeing your name, mate, in the Pink Echo and the Echo and all the rest of it over many, many years. Pretty sure I saw you play at Runcorn once as well. But you are long associated with Southport. You know all about the non-league scene locally, nationally and everything else. We've got you on to talk about the situation, which is that the 2021 non-league season, steps 3 to 6, is being curtailed with immediate effect. First of all, what's your reaction to that, Liam? Because obviously you know this world really well, as I said.
I think, to be honest, Gareth, they haven't played since November, steps 3 to 6. So it was always going to be inevitable that it was going to end. I think they were waiting to see what was going to happen with our league. Obviously, our league got null and void a couple of 10 days ago, so to speak. So they were left with, it would be a huge challenge to complete the season, but then they'd be completing the season for no promotions. So there'd be no promotions, no relegations. So it just becomes a non-event. You'd also have to put into the fact health and safety for players. If you're going to try and cram in, some teams have only played 6 games.
Yeah.
So it's just not viable to actually ask players to go through that. You know, if we're being honest, it's been a pandemic on the back and then another one right on the back of this one. And that's what's thrown everyone. I think our league started with great intentions just to get it going. The person who made that decision probably didn't expect that the second strain had come out as aggressive and as violent as it actually did. But to be honest, Sage and the medics and the scientists, they didn't anticipate it. Mm-hmm. So can't point the finger on anyone. We just need to actually, you know, as you said, call it a day. The last 2 seasons have been interrupted by the pandemic. We just need to give ourselves a chance to start the next season and do it, make sure we get through it right, with fans in especially. Because if I'm being honest, it just hasn't been enjoyable without the fans.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? And at that level as well, Liam, you know, the fans are massive, aren't they? They're massive at any level. But what I mean by that is the people clicking through the gates at Southport, Marine, Bootle, whatever you want, all the local teams, it makes a massive difference, doesn't it, to revenues in terms of, you know, everything they do. So coming through the gate, buying a programme, buying a pint, buying a pie, you know, when you do all that at Liverpool or Everton or whatever it may be, you know, it's small fry when you think about the money they get in from the TV companies, but at non-league level, it's absolutely vital having the fans there, isn't it?
Well, I think of Liverpool, well, I wasn't specifically talking about Liverpool, but it obviously ties in. But I think Tottenham was saying that the fans only generate 10% of the turnover of the business, which is quite astounding for us. But that tells you how much money comes in from the Premier League, etc. And you've got to remember, like, Premier League football is now the UK's biggest export. So,
yeah.
Huge to the economy. But when you do come down to our level, obviously the Premier League look after the EFL. I think the EFL should really look after the National League a lot better than they do. They don't. So when it stopped, we get no money in. So the only money we get is through the gates, through the fans, through, as you said, sponsorships. Ours have been very, very good, by the way. Our sponsors have actually stuck by us. not all them businesses have been, you know, actively good themselves. So for them to stand by us is a really, really good shout out to them. But without fans, without the band, the money fans bring, our level of football just simply can't happen.
And how's it been, Liam, for you, for the lads, just dealing with the fact that, you know, a big part of life has been taken away? Because, you know, I guess you'd agree with the statement that certainly for the amount of time you played as well, like there must have been there's times there where you're definitely doing that for the love, aren't you? I mean, I would have loved to have been good enough to play non-league, don't get me wrong, but what I'm saying is there must have been times you go into some away or whatever, having worked in the day as well, and it must feel like a grind. But then the fact that you actually get to play, you know, that's the release, that's the reason you do it, that's the reason so many do it. To have that sort of plucked away from life, how's that been for you all?
Well, I can only describe for me, myself. Now, you're right what you're saying. You know, some people, this is a career. You know, really, you should be always looking at this as a secondary career in non-league.
Yeah.
That's something I've always done. And, you know, it gives them lads motivation to move up the levels because they want it as a full-time career. I said, but there is an element, you've been in work all week, you go and play. Obviously, you play to win. Obviously, you get an income as well. But there's an element that you also want to chill a little bit at the end of it. So the relaxing, the bonding on the coach, the trips home, they're massive for team spirit, Matt. I'm very much a type of manager. I wouldn't say I'm a tracksuit manager. I'm more very much the one who'll get into your head, get into your mind, talk to you, an element of know what buttons to press. You're not really near the players anymore. If you play in the day, like you play Saturday, you play Tuesday, you'll have 5 minutes before the game, you'll have 5 minutes after the game in and around the players. The rest of the time you're isolated because there's red zones, orange zones, and et cetera, because of COVID. So that actual hands-on with the players, that's not there. That's why I really haven't enjoyed it at all. Even training grounds, you turn up dressed to train. So the lads put the boots on the car and then they'll walk through and go straight out. So there's no one in the changing part, the physio, and that's one at a time. So as a manager, you know, you'll know when you come in the changing room door, in your office, etc. They're all gone. Now my office, I don't have an office at the ground because that's used by the referees because we've got to split everything up. So there's only 11 people plus one in the changing rooms before the game. So you've got an assistant manager, you've got a physio. It just makes it so incredibly difficult all round. And that's not just for us, that's for everyone. So it's that enjoyment aspect has gone. When you like me, at the end of the game, you'll go in, you'll talk, whether it's, depends what mood you're in, but say on average, you might talk 5 minutes at the end of the game, then you've got to come out and then you do the press. And when you come down from the press, there's no bar open. So the players, there's pizza in the changing room. Which isn't ideal. You'll just see someone grab a piece of pizza, walk out the zone in the car and by 5:10, they're on the way out, which is just unheard of.
Yeah, it's all a bit soulless, isn't it? I wanted to ask you as well, you know, I guess again, the way you answered the other question, you can probably only answer for Southport, but is there a worry now that teams at your level, below your level, they just begin to disappear? Because there's, you know, I understand, of course, that there's the furlough scheme and things like that, and football clubs can take advantage of that. But as you said before about, you know, the leagues with the money looking after the leagues below, that isn't really happening, or, you know, to a great extent, is it? Certainly when you get down lower levels. So is there a fear now that with this constant curtailment of seasons and fans still not being allowed in, that we see some clubs disappear?
Huge potential. And I think it could potentially be more than the league above us. Because a lot of them are actually in a position where they've got to carry on. So they're carrying on with no finance at all coming in. Obviously, you know, normally the goal levels will increase in salaries, etc. I haven't got a clue how they're going to actually do it. I really don't know. The season isn't going to... Normally it finishes around the 25th of April. That's now going to go well into June. So there's another couple of months that clubs have got to find. And I know the National League is encouraging you to go and get grants, but on loans, you know yourself, as a director of a company, you start operating insolvent, you're breaking the law. And that's this time around, we're getting at that. Well, the clubs were getting actually pressured into doing that. And obviously, I would say this sounds a little bit strange, but we were lucky that our league's been null and void. Now, I can just explain to players, just look, put it as if you've got a median knee ligament injury and you're going to be out for 8 weeks. That takes you to the end of the season. And then you're off in the summer anyway to come back ready in pre-season. That's just a psychological thing to get their heads around why they're not going to play for 8 weeks. Look at the other clubs. They're going to pick up injury after injury. You're looking at the Premier League clubs. They can't cope with the amount of games they're going to have to be forced to do. So they don't have the National League teams are going to actually survive themselves physically. And how the clubs are going to survive. I know Dover have already completely just stopped, haven't they? They're just not taking part in any games whatsoever anymore.
Yeah, it's a sad situation and a worrying situation. But hopefully, Liam, you know, clubs locally, including the one you represent so well, can continue and can carry on. Because on the Anfield app, we always advocate that in times when you can. You do go and support the non-league clubs. It's not all about the Premier League. It's about football all the way down. Liam, thanks very much for coming on and talking to us today on the Anfield app.
No problem. Thanks a lot for having me. Thank you.
Cheers, Liam. Thanks, mate.
It is the last fan standing quiz. I am Neil Atkinson, and joining me to try to win a fantastic garment of Anfield Wrap merchandise is Matt Preston. I'm Matt. How are you feeling about the weekend? It's a mad game, and you just feel as though it's going to be utterly, utterly miserable. But my God, we could just do with them winning.
We could. It's late as well. I don't know if that makes any sort of impact or something. It's better than the 12:30 kickoff, I guess. We couldn't ask for any better with the late kickoff, could we? But
no, because it can't ruin your weekend. Like I, when you're playing well, I quite like getting the game out the way. But when you're playing badly, I feel like Sunday night, last one now, would be absolutely perfect.
Yeah, it would. I don't know. I can't. I feel like I've watched a lot of Sheffield United. You end up watching like all of the teams at the minute. Yeah. I just can't tell if they're rubbish or not. Like you just can't help but think about the result against Manchester United. Yeah. If I've got my fixtures wrong and we're playing Burnley this weekend, we'll look like a right div.
No. They are indeed. Same thing with the Manchester United thing. It's in the back of my mind as well. Chelsea only win there 2-1. I think City, there's only one goal in it. There's a lot of one-goal games, but I can't quite work out if that's also because teams are just sort of resting against them when they've got ahead. Anyway, we'll crack on. Do the quiz. If you get all 10, you go to the top of our leaderboard, and you also get a T-shirt of your choice. So we will start off with question one. Who, Matt, has scored the most Premier League goals for the Reds so far this season?
Mo Salah.
Easy. Flying. Number two, who did Liverpool beat in the first game of the season? Was it Chelsea, Leeds or Arsenal?
Leeds.
It was indeed. 2 out of 2. Sheffield United away this weekend. Did Liverpool beat them earlier this season, yes or no?
Yes.
Flying, in really good shape, so it begins to get a bit tougher. Number four, Trent Alexander-Arnold has more Premier League appearances this season than Andy Robertson. Is that true or is it false?
That is false.
It is false. Robertson's played 2 more games than Trent, and he's one of the few players to have played all 25 Premier League games this season. Number five, is Ozan Kabak joined Liverpool from which club? Was it Dortmund, Schalke or VfB Stuttgart?
It was Schalke.
He played for Stuttgart before Schalke. He's trying to be clever there and trip us all up. And number six.
Did he play for in Turkey as well at some point?
He moved from Turkey to Stuttgart and then Stuttgart to Schalke, yeah. He's only 20. Must love moving house. number six, what shirt number does Ozan Kabak wear? Is it 19, 20 or 28?
19.
It is indeed 19. 20 is Jota's number. 28 now belongs to Ben Davies, the lesser spotted Ben Davies. Sadio wore 19. Next up, number 7. How many Premier League starts has Kiefer Kelleher made this season? Is it 2, 3 or 4?
He needs to not get confused the Champions League game. I reckon it's 2 because I think Adrian started games, didn't he, when Becker's been out.
It is indeed 2. Wolves and Brighton. He also started in the FA Cup against Aston Villa and Ajax and Midtjylland in the Champions League. So number 8, 3 to get. How many Premier League games has Liverpool won away from home so far this season? How many Premier League games has Liverpool won away from home so far this season? Is it 4, is it 5, or is it 6?
I feel like we haven't won. I think we won against Chelsea, and I don't think we won away for ages until we won one recently. Let's go for 4.
4 is right. It's Chelsea, Crystal Palace, Spurs and West Ham. Absolutely love the capital. Question 9, which of these players did not score in the 7-0 win over Crystal Palace? Which of these players did not score in the 7-0 win over Crystal Palace? Was it Minamino, Henderson or Robertson?
It was Robertson.
It was indeed Robertson. Brilliant stuff. So you've got one more to get right. How many points did Liverpool win in their Champions League group? Was it 15, 13 or 11?
It was 13 or 11. Let's go for 13.
You're right to go for 13. 10 out of 10, Matt. Absolutely marvellous stuff. Feels good, that, doesn't it? I tell you what, you just thought you were having a mundane run-of-the-mill Thursday, and all of a sudden now you feel like top of the world. You should go and run around the block, break your personal best time for the 5K.
In the new T-shirt.
In your new T-shirt. That will come at some point in the next 3 months. Managing expectations massively. Excellent stuff. Listen, thank you very much to Matt and for Last Fan Standing for letting us mess about with quizzes and for writing that one and putting it all together. If you download the app, you can enter into the games, some of which are done by me and John. And then from there, you can also get involved with the predictor stuff around Liverpool Football Club as well. So thank you very much to them. Thank you very much to Matt. Take it easy.
And it's Lizzie Doyle here for the Weekender. And I'm very, very glad to be joined by an old friend of mine from Radio City, Sarah Lawton, founder of the Thrive Project. How are you, Sarah?
I'm fine, thanks, Lizzie. It's really, really good to talk to you and to see you again, even though it's only Zoom.
Honestly, it's so nice to be back speaking to some of the people who were met every time at Radio City. And it's so lovely that, like, with the Anfield Wrap, we can cross over with a couple of the people I met there, because obviously we want to always keep an eye out on what's going on in the city and help out any projects or anything that's happening in the community as much as we can. And obviously we come across yourselves, a brilliant, brilliant project called Thrive that the Anfield Wrap are getting involved in. And I just wanted to invite you on so you could tell our listenership a little bit more about Thrive, you know, how it was founded, what support you need, and basically just tell everyone how brilliant of an idea it is. So do you want to start off by telling us a little bit what Thrive is about?
Yeah, so Thrive is a coffee shop in Liverpool city centre, but it's not open to the general public. It's specifically for if you're a support worker or a care worker and you work with young people. So that could be young people who are in care, could be young offenders, it could be young people who just need some sort of additional support and advice and guidance. And we've been speaking to support workers for months, and what we found out was that there was absolutely nowhere in the city where support workers can meet young people and have meetings. And some of these meetings are quite sensitive. It could have been around if there'd been, you know, some sort of childhood sexual abuse, or if there's a young offender who was sort of trying to get back on the right track and, you know, rehabilitate themselves. They were having meetings in McDonald's and Costa Coffee. So we just wanted to create a space where the support workers can come in, grab a really nice coffee, and it'd be a really warm, welcoming and safe environment for them.
And with that then, obviously, it's not just creating a space for those conversations, is it? It's a bigger picture. It's not just about having a coffee shop and they walk out the door and that's it. You know, that's not the end of the project. Obviously, that's your physical base. That's the thing that you've been working on throughout the whole of lockdown. And I've been watching the progress pictures and they're amazing. And I can't wait to get in there for a coffee myself. But there's a bigger picture to this, isn't it? About helping young people and young people who are in care or coming out of care, young offenders, like you say, about sort of helping them on a bit of a path where, you know, giving them a bit of support and confidence that they can go on to do things that anybody else can.
That's right, Lizzie. So we digitalised the space because what we wanted to do was connect these young people with employers across Liverpool City region. So we have this really strong belief that all young people deserve to live a happy, safe and fulfilling life. And for us, that meant winning hearts and minds of employers and saying, give these young people a chance. So if I give you like a quick case study, we had a young lad who is 18. He's got no parents. He's literally got no one in the world. So when they're 18, he inherits a tenancy, a flat, all his bills. If you could only find him somewhere to live outside of Liverpool, and he was just so lonely. So on his 18th birthday, they brought him in to Thrive to have a coffee so he could see other people. What happened since with that young person? He's really smart. He's really intelligent. He's now in college. We've now got him with a local company being mentored by director of a local mechanical and electrical company. We've been in constant contact with him since October. He's passing all of exams. He's got a job offer.
Amazing.
He'll get a mentored. And since we went live in October, we've actually moved 3 young people have started employment. We've got another 3 about to go into employment. We've had 107 young people through our doors.
Wow.
And we run these interactive career sessions, a bit like me and you. We give young people the opportunity to speak to employers. Next week, we've got COP90.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, they're going to be doing our interactive career session, which is what an opportunity for our young people to be speaking to, like, that global brands with, like, 8 million followers. So we wanted to make the space sort of the safe space, but then you're right, there's so much more to it because we want these young people to believe in themselves. We want to lift the lid off the world of work and we want to help them to get their dream jobs. And the reason behind that is, you know, Liverpool City Region, for the past 10 years, deprivation has increased. So as a region, we've got ingrained sort of poverty and, you know, and it's really tough, isn't it? And with COVID and with the recession, it's going to get tougher. And I firmly believe that the only way as a region we can tackle this sort of ingrained deprivation is helping the young people who are, in some cases, the forgotten. And, you know, it's easy for them to get involved in crime or, you know, to maybe start going down the pathway. Maybe they're not feeling, you know, too good about themselves and then mental health. And they're the young people that, you know, one, they deserve a chance, but they're the young people that will change the future of Liverpool City Region. And it's not easy. And I think that's why not everybody does it.
Yeah.
Because, it's really quite difficult, but it's so rewarding when you see the difference that you're making to their lives.
Like, young people shouldn't be penalised, essentially, for their upbringing that, you know, was not their fault, and they were put into a system which may not have helped them along the way as much as we'd like to think. And, you know, they are people, like you said, they are young people who can help this city grow. They can help this country grow. Like, they are still the people who we need to help push everything forward. And I think what you're doing by creating a lovely safe space for them, but the opportunities, is an amazing thing. And I mean, you're from a construction background, that I know, but you're getting other industries involved, aren't you? You want to sort of open their eyes to, you know, other opportunities, to say, like, you know what, you might be from Heighton, but yeah, you can go on into a big media career. You might be from Wavertree and I've had no money growing up, but guess what, you can go on to work in the music industry. That's what you really want to showcase these young people, isn't it?
Absolutely. I just think that these young people, you know, you could have your future Steve Jobs there, but you've got to be given the opportunity. Imagine how life hard is, how hard life is. And then you've got no one, you've got no mum, you've got no dad, you've got no friends. And it's like they're in a system that, for me, is a failing system. So, you know, it's this like helping hand. In some ways, Thrive works for these young people. By working for the young people, but also working for those support workers, because, you know, they've got really tough jobs themselves. They've got working with hundreds and hundreds of young people, and the number of young people entering the care system in Liverpool City Region is increasing all the time. So we're like, you know what, come in, grab a coffee, while you're sitting there, your young person can access a laptop here. We're going to connect them with all these employers. And really interestingly, DWP have partnered with us. If a young person is 18 to 24, Lizzie, they can attend Thrive and become a member and come to us as an alternative to the job centre.
Brilliant.
So, you know, come in, Kerry's there, Rich is there, Jane's behind the coffee counter, let's see how we can help you. And they don't have to go into the local job centre. And we haven't done it on our own. The Regender Group provided the premises for us rent-free for the first year, which is amazing. We've had help from our construction supply partners. The commercial business that I run, we put half of our profits every year into community projects. So we've been able to fund Thrive, which has been amazing. And then we've got brilliant partners like Merseyside Fire and Rescue Service. So we're sort of going around trying to get, you know, as many people involved as we can. We've got the Learning Foundry, City Liverpool College. You know, we've got all of these organisations who are saying, yeah, this is a great idea and let's work together. And I actually believe as Liverpool City Region, we need this push. But we need employers as well. And we need employers. And it's really difficult times, I appreciate that, to say, if I've got that one chance, if I really want to change someone's life, I'm going to take that young person that's furthest from the job market, because that's going to have the biggest impact. You know, that's going to make a real, real difference to that young person's life. And it genuinely does.
Yeah, I mean, I think the work that you're doing is amazing. And I really just hope that, you know, other employers will jump on board with this. I mean, you've just said there about how it's funded and about obviously getting employers involved. But is there anything else that other people who might be listening to this? Obviously, we've got a really, we've got a brilliant listenership here at the Anfield Rap. And, you know, we have people listening from far and wide who not only love Liverpool Football Club, but they love the city. And we're constantly asked, especially during this pandemic, I'd say, you know, there's this real desperate need of people wanting to help the city from outside. And there'll be people sat here listening to you now thinking, like, I'd love to help those young people in the city region. How else can people get involved with Thrive?
We really want people to be signposts for Thrive. So if you know somebody who's 18 to 24, they want some support, find them for work, you know, send them to us. Now, I can, you know, we've got a website, which is www.thrive.cic.co.uk, and I can even give you our number. So if a young person is generally just wants to phone up because of COVID, but it's a bit like silver servers, actually, you know, we're booking tables, so you can phone up and book a table, and our number is 07375 648 622. Come in, have a coffee, jump onto a career session, or don't. So yes, this is all voluntary, you know. But yeah, we really sort of, our message would be, if you know somebody 18 to 24 and they need the support, if you can tell them that we're here for them, then, you know, that's all we need, really, working together. It's great.
And oh, can yeah, people donate to us?
So we've had donations from some corporate organisations who we work with. We're always looking for people who will do some fundraising for us. So, you know, the way you did the PPE stuff, Lizzie? So people who might be able to sort of, you know, do some run for us, maybe do some cycling. We're always looking for, you can sponsor a young people. So we have sponsorship packages.
Great.
You can literally just purchase coffees. So we don't charge the young people or support workers anything for the drinks or the refreshments. So fundraising, sponsorship, it's actually a brilliant way for organisations to disperse their corporate social responsibility. So they can sponsor a young person with their journey through Thrive. And if you are looking to, you know, to do something that will drive social value and have that massive impact, then you know, we're happy to take your corporate money.
Honestly, take the money indeed. It's a really fantastic organisation. I mean, you've just said the website's www.thrive-cic.co.uk. We'll put all the information in the bio as ever. Just looking at those sponsorship packages, you know, there's some really good things there. You know, if you do want to help out a little bit more, if you're not in Liverpool, for example, but you want to help out, like, please just go to the website. And if you go to the support Thrive page or donate, there's a couple of options there. You know, platinum, we can support 40 young people, gold, support 20 young people, silver, bronze, it goes on. Monthly subscription, £50 a month. So if you've got a business, if you want to go to your employer, if you want to do it yourself, you know, £50 a month, and it'll pay forward for some hot drinks and for these key workers and these young people, you know, who really do need it. You know, money doesn't grow on trees, as we know. And like you said, sir, that it's a, as much as this city is fantastic, it is a deprived area with a lot of poverty. And you know, anything that anyone can do to help is a really, really big thing. And you know, we're so happy in the Anfield Draft to be getting involved. I've done a career jukebox and the young people got to see me with half a face of makeup. So I'm just saying, they probably got more than they bargained for, Sarah. Yeah. And hopefully we're going to get some of those interactive sessions going. And yeah, so if there's anything you do want to be involved in, if you're listening, please head to the website. There's a contact us page. If you want, even if you want to nominate someone for an interactive session, you can do that, because you can sign up for them online. You know, there's a Microsoft Teams thing there where you can sign up for all different talks. Yeah, and check them out. Give them a follow. Give them your support, because they really are a brilliant organisation doing the best for young people in this city. So, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us on the Anfield Draft.
Lizzie, thanks. Thanks for asking me, and it's so nice to speak to you again.
Neil Atkinson here. It's rare to have an insert that actually meets up directly with an action point from the Anfield Raps meetings. And one of the ones I've had recently is the idea that I've got to get my LinkedIn sorted out. And around the same time, LinkedIn Talent Solutions got in touch with us around the fact that the idea now is that I think everyone's looking to get ready for hopefully whatever happens next, and to find a way to get some new employees, and if you're an employee, find some new people. It's all about having the right people in this, and we've been so fortunate with that in every single way, really. The team that works behind the scenes, as you know, they're really, really important to us, but also the people up front as well, getting that chemistry and the right people at the right time. Matching roles is really, really important, and LinkedIn Jobs can help you do that, so you can find the right person quickly. Your first job post on there is also free. So within there as well, you can see the sort of candidates that you need. As I say, I've been meaning to get on there. I really have. And it's, you know, it's poor form, really. It's something I know I need to sort out. LinkedIn is an active community. It's got professionals with more than 30 million members in the UK. Getting started is really, really easy. And getting the job going with targeted screening questions, then you'll get in front of the right and qualified candidates, and they can also get in front of you. You can manage job posts and contact candidates as well from a single view on the familiar LinkedIn.com, as functions are streamlined onto that screen from the LinkedIn Talent Solutions aspect. And you can do it all on mobiles as well. So there's really no excuse, not least for me. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to have to go into a meeting and have another week where I say, no, I haven't got around to it yet, but I will. And I will report back. And genuinely, it is something that is important for businesses, full stop, making sure your online presence is spot on and where it needs to be. So when you are ready, whatever business you're involved in, to bring another new person in, to find that next new person who's going to add a great deal, find it with LinkedIn Jobs. You can post a job for free right now. Just visit linkedin.com/rap. That's LinkedIn, linkedin.com/rap, to post a job for free. Terms and conditions will obviously apply upon that. But we're pleased that they're partnering with us. And in many, many ways, we need to crack on with partnering with them.
Okay, thanks to everyone there. Brilliant stuff as ever. We are now going to be talking about the Sheffield United game this Sunday. A late kickoff there on Sunday. So you can have your roast and then watch the Reds hopefully roast Sheffield United. Robbie, how are you feeling about this game, mate? I mean, we all know sort of where Sheffield United are, what their season's been like. Fucking hell. I think we've had it bad. They've only seen their side win 6 times across the course of the season, I think it is. Let me just check. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah. So they beat Bristol Rovers in the FA Cup. They beat Newcastle 1-0. They beat Plymouth in the FA Cup. They've only won 3 times in the Premier League. They beat Man United away, which is fucking hilarious. And then they beat West Brom. And then, yeah, their most recent win is Bristol City in the FA Cup. But they went, you know, they went from the start of the season until January without seeing the side win. Now that is graft.
And it, they are a mad, mad team, because I don't even think they're the worst team in the bottom three. I think West Brom probably take that mantle. I was looking at this before, Sheffield United, I think they've lost three games by three goals, which for a team with the points they've got at the bottom of the league, I'd expect them to be getting hammered week in, week out. But that kind of probably just points to the fact that they do graft and they do work. So I'm feeling optimistic about the weekend, but I do think that we're going to have to fight for it.
Absolutely.
I just think there's also that bit of needle between Klopp and Wilder, which, you know, hasn't really been resolved from earlier on in the season. And this is the first time they're going to come head to head, isn't it? So I'm cautiously optimistic about the weekend. I'm expecting them to have to graft, but I think sometimes when you've been on a run that we've been on, that's probably the best way to get that first win. Do you know what I mean? Because if you go out and you batter someone, it's like 4 or 5 nil. It get your confidence is soaring again, but it can quickly come, you know, the fall can be as kind of as hard as the rise, if you like. So
like beating Palace 7-0 and then not winning
exactly,
ever, I guess. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. It was like we scored every goal we had in us in that one game and then we just bugged ourselves. But I think we'll be all right at the weekend, but I'm expecting us to have to fight for it in a big way.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Carl, as well, because I just, in fact, for this, I thought I'd have a listen to a Sheffield United podcast. There's one called Blades Pod, I think it's called. We've definitely used them before on Anfield App stuff, and I've actually met the lad who does it, and he sound, and my God, you know, like, again, it helped me listening to be honest, because, like, they were just, like, one of the lads said, like, when he watched their West Ham game when they got tonked by West Ham, which was one of the goals that they did lose by three goals, one of the games they did lose by three goals, he said he just turned it off. He couldn't watch anymore. He said when I was listening to so they were talking about their side, they were saying our best five players are basically injured. Then they were saying, but we're playing good football, but not in either box. You know what I mean? And then they were saying, it seems like the other team only needs one chance and they score, whereas we just go round and round in circles, don't quite carve out a good chance and then don't score. And I was thinking, sounds fucking familiar.
That sounds very familiar, doesn't it? Yeah. have a runaway goal, Burnley. Have a runaway goal, Brighton. Feel free. We'll just hem you in.
It's got to end somewhere, though, hasn't it, Carl? I mean, I know we've got our problems at the weekend, not least, you know, who's going to play centre-half and all that, but, you know, we've got Jota there or thereabouts. He's either, you know, I imagine at the very least he's going to be on the bench. So what are you thinking?
Liverpool win, because that's my default position on everything, regardless of what's going on. It's the only way you can really think about it. They are a really weird club. I'm thinking about last year, like, when, you know, we won 1-0 at their place. Very, very luckily when the Mank goalkeeper let it go through his legs, which was obviously more important than the goal. I enjoyed that. But when they played at Anfield as well, we beat them 2-0. And Chris Walton afterwards, who said, like, you know, 2-0 flattered them because we were so good. Sorry, with Liverpool were so good. We had to really be on the mark to beat them. And I remember that being a tough game, actually. And everyone's like saying, oh, Liverpool was so good. But, you know, we had really worked hard for those two goals. And then this season, they've dissolved into nothing. And we're trying to catch them. So I didn't even realise they were bottom league. Like Robbie, I thought West Brom were going to be, just because, you know.
Yeah, 11 points from 25 matches.
That's mad. Half the points per game's played.
Three wins, two draws, 20 defeats, and they've only scored 15 goals as well in the league.
It sounds like we can get a point.
Chloe, what's your Sheffield United feels?
I think that it'll be a graft, but I think we've got enough to do them, and there's no better time, you know, to rally around everything that's happened, to try and block everything out, to try and basically say, oh, Alisson, we'll win for you as well as the rest of us. And to be fair, everyone at Liverpool just needs a bit of a lift up, from the players to the coaching staff to Jürgen to the fans. And if I'm honest, you know, it seems like a bit like us, Sheffield United. You know, I remember Aston Villa, when they played them last season, they scored a goal and it wasn't given because goal line technology wasn't working. And since then, it seems like it's been a downward spiral. We're us, that Everton game where, you know, Pickford snapped to Virgil van Dijk and two, you know, Thiago nearly had to get a replacement knee. We've scored a goal that's onside, that's offside. It seemed like these two games seem like the start of our downfall. And I think it's a great game to say, you know what, we're not in the best of form, neither are you, but, you know, let's go for it, let's have it. And, you know, also the fact that they're missing some players. They've, you know, we've won the last four Premier League games against them, so why not back us? And you've always got to back yourselves, because if not, then what is the point in watching football if you don't believe you can get nothing out of it? And I reckon Sheffield will be thinking they can get something out of it. And right,
Sheffield United, don't just say Sheffield, someone will fume about it.
Sheffield United, so trying to get rivalries there. But I reckon they'll be up for it as well. And with the form that we've both been in, I'm not surprised by that. But I reckon go there, do them, come in with the 3 points and hopefully turn your season around in the sense of, can we actually have a run of form of wins, please, Liverpool? Because, you know, we play so well in half of the pitch and then the rest is a bit lacklustre. It looks like we don't have the spark, the creativity. And I think this is a big game for Thiago because I reckon he's the one who can get into that back three.
Robbie, we talked about Sheffield United only managing 15 goals in the league this season. Fewer than any other side, it obviously goes without saying. Our sort of, you know, one of the big plus points for us has been Mo Salah. He's obviously the top scorer in the league. He scored 16 in his last 17 away from home as well. As many as he scored in his previous 51 on the road. So he's enjoying, he's getting more space and more time, more chances, whatever it may be, on away from home. Equally for Sheffield United, and I don't mean to laugh, but I mean, I listen to their podcast, they're laughing at themselves. They're just like, fucking hell, this again. And so they've scored 15, and 35-year-old Billy Sharp has got 3, and 33-year-old David McColdrick has got 5. So those two between them have got over half of their goals. I mean, whoever we've got at centre-half's got to be able to deal with some of these lads who can't hit a barn door, surely. And someone somewhere is going to tell me I'm tempting fate, but come on, it's got to come for us this weekend.
Yeah. The one question I've got there is Ollie McBurney, because I'm just worried that they'll go a bit battering ram, you know, against two inexperienced centre-halves. But
I do that.
Yeah. But by the same token, I just think this weekend's going to be, I think Salah in particular will be looking at last weekend, and I think that the chance where, you know, Pickford's closed them down, I mean, it was, I heard that's the first shot this season that Salah's had in the 6 yard box, which I thought was a staggering stat.
Yeah,
and that made me just think, if he's missing chances like that, he's the type of player that will. He'll be in his own head and he'll be like, I'm scoring this game. I'm scoring this game. There's just no two ways about it. I should have scored last week, and because I didn't, I'm going to score this week. And I just think this weekend that it's just got the potential to be a turning point. I just think with players as good as the ones we've got, they'll be looking at this game and thinking, all right, cards on the table now. We've got to push on. And I am confident about it. I really am. I just think that we'll see a bit of I'm fancy Salah this weekend. I really do.
Carl, I wanted to, I feel like there's not been enough chat about it. And I've been guilty of saying, I don't think he's good enough. You know, he was about to go to Swansea, etc. But are we in the Nat Phillips fan club now, lad, or what?
I think he's one of the greatest centre-halves to ever grace the pitch. Ever.
He's all right, though, isn't he? And you know what?
I don't mind him at all.
You know, on Sheffield United's podcast that I just listened to there, they're absolutely fuming that apparently any time the opposition gets a corner, they just concede the goal. And, like, the lads were going, honestly, it's like Groundhog Day. They were like, you just watch it and go, well, this is going to be a goal. And I was thinking about our boys, and I was thinking, not sure anyone really... I fancy anyone going, you know, nodding one in. Then I thought, Big Nat would fancy it.
Big Nat, yeah. Mm. When that Firmino's goal against Tottenham, to get the winner. Nat Phillips was standing right next to him at the time, and I thought he'd scored the goal. And I thought, well, this is it. I think it was Nat Phillips anyway. Or it might have been Reese, I don't know. But he gets up there, doesn't he? And he doesn't mind throwing his head on a few things. So I'm right behind him doing this. I'm right behind him completely. Are they going to play our old boy, do you think? Up front?
Brewster.
Yeah.
He's not been getting too much of a sniff at times, has he? I don't think. I've not done my research, but I think it's fair to say it's not gone well for him, has it?
No.
Do you know what I mean?
No. Thanks for the money. I don't know, but it's it is a bit mad when I agree with the Mo Salah thing completely, Robbie, but I'm also thinking Sadio's due a few as well, because Sadio goes a bit quiet and he comes back mad again. Like, and Mo's exactly the same, so I think maybe Sadio can throw a few in. But I mean, I'll take both. I'll take two hat-tricks. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, that'll be all right. And
Firmino
might have read Jimmy Pierce's piece, and he might see Jota there and think, ah, fuck, is it? I'll show you some skills. Chloe, what do you reckon at centre-half? Because obviously there do remain some options, believe it or not. You could go Nat Phillips. Robbie mentioned Ben Davis, who we still haven't really seen, so we've absolutely no idea of how good he is. You could still do even further stick and plaster stuff. I mean, Genie's played centre-half, hasn't he? Do you know what I mean? What do you want to see happen at centre-half at the weekend?
To be fair, I don't know how... first of all, I'd want to back because I need him to get some rhythm. You've put him in there, you've played him the last couple of games. Keep him in there, get him the rhythm. You know, if he's your first-choice centre-half, you've got an option to buy. You need to test him out. If you're going to see if you want to buy him or not, supply him. As for Nat Phillips, I have been stunned this entire season how he's not been the first centre-half on that list. Like, truthfully, when he's came in, he's looked the most solid. Defensive areas when you're absolutely crapping yourself from corners because you've not got Virgil, Joel Matip, who's like 6'7". Like, Nat Phillips has had some crucial headers clearing that ball away. And I think he's looked solid every time he's played. I was stunned at the fact that Reece Williams was put before him, because not just do I think Reece Williams is too young at the moment, it's a lot of pressure for like a 19-year-old kid. Mm. Nat Phillips is, you know, he's played abroad, he's got a bit more about him, a bit more experience, maybe not at this level, but he just looked a lot safer and a lot more relaxed and familiar with his positioning. So Cavachan and Phillips would be my two. Do not put another midfielder there, because I'm losing my will to live, honestly. I am. Like, Jordan Henderson, loved him. It was class at centre-half. You know, I understood we had to do him there, but his job in midfield is crucial. And he's now injured. You're taking Genie out of that role as well. It's tits up in the middle of that midfield for me, honestly, because they're so good and the work ethic is right there that if you put Genie at centre-half, you know, you've got the three midfielders trying to run ragged for them and cover the spaces that they do. They do the nasty and hard grit work. And now you're going to have someone who's maybe not as familiar doing that job. So most definitely known centre-halves. They may not have experience, they may not have played. For all sake, put me there, you know what I mean? I used to play centre-half in Sunday League.
Go ahead.
But, like, do not put another midfielder there. I'd rather Bobby Firmino, honestly. I really would rather Bobby Firmino at centre-half than a midfielder at this moment in time.
Robbie, you mentioned Naby before. Can we pin any hopes on this lad? I mean, you know, look, it might not have been his fault and all that and blah, 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 but I think it's fair to say, as things stand, we paid a massive fee for him and we've only seen him flashes what he can do.
Yeah, it hasn't worked out for him so far, has it? He's obviously a player. I mean, he's got that, like, attribute where he never seems to have his head down when he's on the ball. You know what I mean? Even when he's in full flight, his head's always up. He's always scanning about him. And it's just those injuries. It's just those injuries, and it's like, I remember in the Nou Camp when Barcelona beat us, he was playing really, really well, wasn't he? And then he goes off that day, and it's since then in particular, it seemed very stop-stop-start. The new fella they've got in, the German doctor that the club have brought in, they're looking at different ways to rehabilitate players after injuries, yeah, aren't they? Yeah. And I think this might be his last... Probably not his last. I don't think they'll sell him in the summer or anything, but I think if it doesn't work out this time, you know, in his rehabilitation, I don't fancy the long term future for Keita. which is sad because I think he's a cracking player. I really do. But the problem is we've paid £55 million for him, haven't we? So the club are going to want a return at some point on that.
Okay, let's do predictions then to wrap up. I've actually spotted something really nice and really positive on Twitter. I feel like we all slaughter Twitter quite a lot, especially in the bad times. So it was nice to spot something good. So I'm going to finish off with that. But before that, hit me with some predictions, Carl.
3-0 Liverpool.
3-0 to Liverpool. Go ahead. Yep.
Go on, big.
Chloe.
2-0.
3-0 also Chloe. To Liverpool.
Tim.
Chloe.
I can't
go
3. I mean, I want a trick, but, you know,
you
I'll
two?
Stick with 2, yeah.
Two, I'm going injury time for the third, by the way.
I don't take any credit, but under the lights, I said 2-0, I'll be Leipzig, and, you know, we ended up with that score, so I'm hoping it's the same this time, so I'm staying safe.
Go ahead. Mr. Chloe there. Robbie?
An hard fought 1-0 and the start of a resurgence. That's what I'll go for.
Yeah, and I'll just say fucking any win, anyway, anyhow, just fucking win, please, Reds. Okay, the lovely tweet that I've seen is from James McCarthy at James Invictus, and he says, a year ago today, the Reds beat West Ham 3-2. That was the final game in a Premier League run of 35 wins and a draw from 36 games over nearly a full year. 106 points from 108. The greatest run in the 132 years of top flight European football. We watch greatness, never forget. We will return. I fucking love that. I feel like we should all go out after James' tweet there. But anyway, that has been the weekend. Thanks to everyone. Let's all pray for a Liverpool win. Sports Social Podcast Network.